you want to know something that's actually interesting now I think about it? With the expensive games that we're speaking about, a lot of the most popular games over the last couple of years are actually free games, if you think about it. Currently, we have The Finals, which is really popular. It's a free game. I believe CSGO is currently free, and it's been one of the most played games for a decade now, I think. Fortnite blew up, was crazy big game. That was free. So we are kind of in an interesting time where we do have these triple A games or quadruple A games that are £50-60 and completely bomb. And then we have these free games coming out that are extremely popular.
Hello and welcome to the all-new AV Forums Gaming Podcast for April 2024. It's a new generation of podcasts following in the footsteps of where the TV, home AV, hi-fi and movies teams have all walked in the past. We will now be running, double jumping and pressing X to interact with all of you. Call it the new generation of podcasts. We have, well, back in the day, I remember doing a few gaming podcasts of old, but this is a whole new generation. I had dark hair back then. It's a whole console generation has moved on since, and we've even had nearly two entire GTAs in the meantime. So what we'll be doing, we'll be filling in where the other podcasts have been, as you mentioned, but they work to a weekly schedule. And as we all know, some months have five Mondays in them, which means we get to basically step in where those extra days or those extra weeks enable us to. So this will be the first one with a couple more to come later on in the year. I think we'll have one in July, one in September and one in December. So with a lot of very, very good games to come, hopefully we'll have a lot to be talking about. Joined in this podcast by Tom Davis, Seth Grimes and Gordon Balfour. So hello to everybody.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi, welcome aboard. What we'll be doing, we'll be getting to know these guys a little bit better shortly, and then we'll start the ball rolling with a few of our key topics. Big question is really whether we're going to be asking is whether video games are too expensive. Short answer is probably yes, but are they worth it? Probably yes. So we'll be raising a few of those questions. We'll be looking at maybe, you know, the industry as a whole. Are bigger games and bigger budgets a good thing? Is the indie scene better than ever? But in turn, are there other aspects that come into it as well? You know, is Game Pass and subscription services something that we want to be looking forward to or want to be making better use of? Is DLC and microtransactions still an unwanted nuisance, or is it just a fresh and inventive way for publishers to get new content out there for us to start playing? We'll find out. And no doubt we'll be name-dropping a few of the big games as well as we go. Some of our personal favourites, some of the genres that we like, some things that you might want to be on the lookout for. So if you're interested in gaming, you know, by all means, stay tuned, and there might be one or two games you might want to look up when we're done. Bit of admin we should discuss. You can also watch the video version of this podcast by heading over to the AV Forums podcast channel. Should point out, it's different to the main AV Forums channel, so you'll need to look up AV Forums podcast and then subscribe to make sure you never miss an edition of this podcast or any other great podcasts that we put out. You can also watch or listen to those AV Forums podcasts every Monday from 7 p.m. on YouTube, or audio only via your favorite podcast providers. And of course, need to add, if you do enjoy our content and podcasts, then please feel free to tell as many people as possible. Tell all your friends, post links across the groups, social media, and any other forums that you come across who might be interested in some of the subjects we cover. Getting the word out is always appreciated. And of course, you can have your feedback on the stuff that we talk about. Should we talk about other factors? What games should we be talking about? Should we be talking about tech? Should we be bringing in hardware? Let us know the kind of things we should be talking about, and we'll bear those in mind when the next podcast rolls around in a few months. So I guess with that out of the way, we should probably get some introductions made. As mentioned at the top, my name's Ian Collin. I manage a lot of the gaming content for the AV Forums website. I also write a large chunk of the news. In terms of gaming, I did do the maths earlier, and it's quite tragic. My gaming background dates back to the Atari 2600, back in the days of Pong, when video games basically had four white lines, moved them around a little bit, and told you that they were like five different games. Like, there's Pong, put two white lines in it, now it's hockey. Move those white lines around, now it's American football. Very exciting times. And then moved through, I went through the Spectrum era, the Amiga era, so a lot of great games from back in those days. Probably the big hole in my gaming portfolio, I missed the kind of Sega, Sony, Nintendo kind of emergence factor. I was playing a lot of football back then and not playing a lot of video games. So I did miss a lot of kind of classic titles from maybe 20 odd years ago. but then got back into it when the Xbox came along. That's when I started working for video game magazines, and the rest, as they say, is history. So who wants to go first in upping themselves? Tom, you're the professional. You've been doing a lot of these podcasts for a while, so maybe you can lead the way and tell us about your own story and how you got into gaming.
Yeah, well, I seem to remember my first ever video game was the Hobbit Text Adventure, which I think was on a BBC Micro. No doubt my dad would have requisitioned from this whatever school he was working at the moment and brought home.
Was that retro, or are you really not as old as you look?
I may be a little bit older than I look.
It's the hat. It's
yeah, and then from there, just. I think we had a C64, Amiga 500, and then from then I went into PC gaming. And I've just been like steadily obsessed with it for most of my life since that like BBC Micro. We had a BBC Micro, we had an RM Nimbus as well, if anyone remembers those. So just messing around with those at quite a young age and just got me hooked. It has to be said though, I really shouldn't be here. Reaction times are for shit. I can't like aim. If you require me to play a game that involves any kind of like dexterity, if you've got to be fast and good and quick, just count me out. I can't do that. Now, I maybe once upon a time I could, but I think I'm mostly a liability when it comes to video games now, so my tastes have dramatically slowed down, and I do find myself like going back more these days
to enjoy games.
Yeah, to like the video game preservation and retro gaming, and so that's generally where my current interests lie.
Any
never played professionally that, but yeah,
any favorite games or standout titles? I mean, you mentioned a couple, but if someone said, you know, if you could only go back and play one or two games in your past, what would they be?
Oh, man.
That's a question, isn't it?
Insane. That's an insane question. I need more prep time than that. probably right up there is going to be the original Deus Ex. I can't tell you how many times I've played that game to completion, and I still love it today. So that's up there. Diablo 2. The number of hours I sunk into that as a teenager as well. Those are some of my like formative experiences. Those are the ones that have stuck with me.
Good games. Okay, Gordon, you've also done some work with the forums. So if you could explain a little bit about kind of what you do and also how you got into gaming and what you like to play.
Yeah, sure. Firstly, Tom, can't aim. No reaction times. Can you come and join our Call of Duty team, mate? Because I think you'd do really well, mate. Trust me. My name's Gordon. I was an AV Forums member since 2006. I'm also one of the moderators for the classified section. So you might have, some of our listeners might have come across me in one way or the other, be that good or bad. Who knows? As long as you behave yourselves, then you always stay on the good side of the moderating team. So, and it's not very often you get to see a moderator in real life. So here I am. We do exist. We are real people, believe it or not. Real people with real feelings. As far as gaming goes, Ian, basically the same as you. It was like, yeah, I've done that. No, yeah, I did that. Yeah, I did that. Started with the Atari 2600 back in the day. Originally, and then kind of flip-flopped a bit between PC and console over the years, couldn't really settle on one or the other, had Amigas, had Ataris, same as you, missed out on the Sega Saturn and things like that, because I was off doing other things involving girls and drink probably around about that time. Then got back into it heavily, PlayStation, remember getting PlayStation 1 for Christmas one year, and then I kind of went PlayStation 1, PlayStation 2, then went back into PC gaming, played a lot of Xbox. So I've done both. Now I kind of sit in both camps. I've got a PC and I've got a PlayStation 5 as well. But I'm mainly a PC gamer, I would say, more than over the console. But I do enjoy console gaming still. So, I've got friends in both camps. As far as favorite genres go, I like a lot of MMOs, strategy games, RPGs, that kind of thing. A lot of single player games and co-op. Competitive multiplayer is not really my thing. We have a group of people that get together two or three times a week, and you know, we play Call of Duty and just basically, you know, lose quite a lot. And you kind of think, why am I doing this? This isn't fun. Why am I doing this? Don't tend to play much sport games apart from PGA. Big fan of PGA golf. So I like nothing better than a couple of hours with a round of PGA golf. But like my big fantasy RPGs and stuff like that. In terms of my proudest achievement, my proudest Xbox achievement, I once completed Vinyl Artists on Rock Band 2, which was 84 songs straight, and took me 7 hours. And only 4.73% of gamers have this achievement. So I'd say that's probably my greatest gaming achievement. And I did it on a set of drums.
On drums as well?
Yeah, I did, yeah, on drums.
Oh, man, so, must have been hanging at the end. My arms
It was quite difficult. I remember you weren't allowed to turn the console off. You weren't allowed to pause it. But I think you could kind of cheese it by taking a break in between songs. And I remember doing it. My wife was out one night and I thought, oh, I'm going to do this. And yeah, I sat for 7 hours solid doing that. Is that something to be proud of? Well, that's debatable, I suppose. But yeah.
Hell yeah.
I like to think I'm proud of it. Currently playing Elden Ring. Spend a lot of time in Elden Ring. I'm currently playing through both first Final Fantasy, and I'm just about to start Rebirth as well. So,
yeah, very far in Elden Ring. I keep trying, and I kind of get to the same point, and it's just like,
yeah, I've probably got about 200 hours in it, and I'm going to come on to that later when we're talking about the price of games. Still haven't finished it yet. So I'm a serial game restarter. So I must have restarted Skyrim 300 times, give or take. Elden Ring probably not quite the same, but about the same. Get so far and you think, yeah, no, I don't like this character. Rather than respec, I just go back and start again. It's something that I do, unfortunately. The kids think it's hilarious, but they do it now as well. So now it's not so funny anymore.
Yep.
So yeah,
I'm the same. I've got like Minecraft, No Man's Sky, Elden Ring, Destiny. All of that. I just play them on a loop, basically.
Yeah.
You play one, get bored with it a little bit, stop. Then by the time you've forgotten where you were, so you've got to restart again.
Yeah, of course you have. Yeah, yeah.
Makes sense.
I am playing Helldivers 2 at the minute as well, as long with the rest of the gaming population. So big fan of that. So
it does look good. Okay, well, after all that, this makes Seth, our last podcast guest, positively the next generation. You're basically half of our ages. So bring a little bit of youth to the table. Seth, doing reviews for the website already. So if you could tell us a little bit about how you got into gaming and what you're up to and the kind of things that you like to play.
Yeah. So I think firstly, you might be wrong about my age, maybe, because you'll see now with my background, you'll see if you figure it out. But I accidentally got into gaming when I was younger because we moved to a new area, my family. I had no friends. So my parents had consoles at the time. My dad had an Atari. My mom had a Sega. So, you know, a lot of Sonic, stuff like that, very early on. And then eventually I got my own console, which came out a couple years later, which was a PS1. Played my first game, Command & Conquer Retaliation, which was a PC game at the time, but I had no idea what PC was. So I was playing on console. And I loved it. It was probably one of my all-time favorite games now. And now I realize how awkward that is playing on a console when you don't have a mouse or anything like this to move around. But I loved it. And I played that game on repeat because it was the only game I had on the PlayStation 1. Then I went on to Final Fantasy 7, Final Fantasy 9, fell in love with those games, got a Game Boy for Pokemon, played that relentlessly, probably complete that game 20 times or something. And then eventually through the years, I switched through a lot of consoles, PS2. I went to Xbox 360 for Halo because back then there was the console wars, right? It was like, hey, Xbox, we've got these exclusive games. Halo, if you want to play Halo, you have to buy an Xbox. So back then we actually had to make choices because, hey, if I play my PlayStation, it's going to be free internet at least, but no Halo. And then Gears of War as well was a really big one. I can't remember the PlayStation exclusives. I do believe they had one or two big names. I think Uncharted might have been one of them, where that was the one that people were deciding on. And then after that, I bought a laptop to play Foot Manager, only to play Foot Manager. And then slowly I started to become a PC gamer after I tried more and more games. And then, yeah, I just left consoles behind at that point because I was like, okay, on PC, I've got such a range of games and I can also get indie games, which are really cheap. Because at that point, when you have consoles, it's basically £40 or £50 or you don't get to play the newest game, you know, or you don't get to try a game or something. And obviously the modding scene as well was a really big one. Although there is one thing I do miss about gaming on a console, which is the fact that you can guarantee it's going to work. Whereas on PC, there are sometimes you just games just do not like your PC. They just don't like it. It won't work how you want it to work. And there's not much you could do. You might have to spend a couple hours figuring it out. Whereas on a console, if you put the game in, you know it's going to work and you're sorted, you know? So that's the one thing I do miss is the ease of everything on consoles.
As a console gamer, I can tell you they do still mess up quite often. Well, actually, no. Yeah. It's always a console that messes up when I do something wrong. That's my
obviously, yeah, really. Of course,
yeah. It's the controller. That controller.
Stick drift. Damn stick drift every time.
Okay, well, nice to meet everybody. Has to get a bit of a gaming background on you all. Looks like we've got, you know, a few similarities, but also, you know, some welcome differences, and that's part of the fun of gaming, I suppose. It's the fact that everybody has their own preferences. Like Tom was saying, you don't necessarily have to be good at gaming to enjoy certain games. There's a lot of I've always been rubbish at fighting games. I've always been rubbish at I've never gone into Final Fantasy games just because I generally suck at them. So I kind of, there's a few kind of, everybody's kind of got a few kind of barriers that kind of stop them. But I guess the thing is, play what you enjoy and enjoy what you play, really. That's about the mantra that we all hope to live by. Okay, so moving forward, further bit of admin, just to kind of reflect on the wider AV Forums network. Typically, we'll have competitions on the go, so we'd like to keep you aware of things that you can win, and we are offering some very, very big prizes. And this would be the stage where we would run you through some of those. But as Tom is about to explain, don't exactly have a lot to be filling you in with right now, but that's not to say there's not a lot of very good things to come. So Tom, if you could just run through the list of not quite so current competitions.
Oh, sure. So, by the time we air, we will just have closed a competition for a set of KEF LSX 2LT wireless speakers. So I'm sorry you missed out on that, but you don't have to miss out on future competitions if you head over to avforums.com and go to the competitions page. Recent winners include RBG123, who won a pair of brand new Q Acoustic M40 speakers, courtesy of Peter Tyson. Those are incredible. Irritated Badger, what fantastic name, won a Valencia Tuscany XL Ultimate Luxury Onyx Cinema Seat. And that's worth £2,200. Cinema
what a
seat.
What a piece of kit that was, I tell you. That was nice. That incredible. I would have liked that.
Yeah. Absolutely. So if that's the sort of thing you're interested in, as well as tons of Blu-ray competitions for the latest 4Ks, some special collector's edition box sets in there every now and then, head on over to the website and get entering. Because do you know what? If you are signing up as a patron, you're getting exclusive access to some competitions. And eventually, you're going to win something. I'm not going to guarantee it, but I guarantee it. You're going to win something. So head over there and get involved.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always that thing where everybody, you kind of assume that somebody else is going to win it, so why should I bother? And then hardly anybody enters. So why not? We've got loads of these competitions going on. And yeah, I'm always horribly envious, and I kind of feel like I should be entering myself, and we are allowed to. It's only like sort of people that work directly for AV Forums aren't allowed to. But yeah, maybe I will. Maybe I should. Anyway, moving on. Like we mentioned at the top of the program, we're going to be talking about we've talked a lot about our previous gaming industry, so we'll bring things up to date a little bit and talk about how things are currently looking. Bit of an overview to start with, perhaps, just because I saw some recent figures, always impressive, just about how big a business gaming is these days. I think in 2023, it was like £7.8 billion was spent on gaming, with more than £5 billion on that just on games. Both of those figures are up on 2022. So obviously gaming is becoming increasingly big business. A lot of people that maybe focus on the music industries or the movie industries don't quite realize just how much money there is in gaming right now, which for the most part, great for us gamers. Means there's a lot of people going to be making games, gives us a lot of options. And it kind of works in one of two ways, really, because you do get a kind of pressure to be the next big thing. So you get the big blockbuster games, huge budgets, you know, GTA 6 rolling along, hundreds of millions being spent on it. But those kind of games do come with kind of a risk reward factor. I mean, harking back to the olden days that I mentioned before in my magazine days, I was working alongside companies such as Atari, Midway, even THQ to an issue, you know, all big names, stellar track records, had a couple of bad years. It only takes one or two flops when you're investing hundreds of millions of pounds and things can go very wrong very quickly. And as we've seen this year alone, but a lot of redundancies within the gaming industry. So while we're talking about great games with big budgets, we're also talking about companies that maybe aren't doing quite so well. Obviously, the fact is you've got the likes of Microsoft, Sony, Epic, Tencent, people like that, they're signing up other companies as well. So there is kind of a natural coming together into kind of a greater whole, which might work for the benefit of some studios, might work to the detriment of others, because, again, as they merge, they streamline, people get laid off. You hope that those people will be able to go off and make other games, which is where, for me, the indie scene begins to thrive, because there's a lot of opportunities for those people to kind of set up stock and bring out more games. So I guess, you know, it's just a general introduction, really. How do you see the gaming industry right now? Is it in a good place? Are we happy with these big budgets? Do you prefer playing, like, you know, the smaller indie scene games because there's maybe a bit more creativity? Just to get a bit of a flavor of how your gaming past has led to just how you see the gaming present. How do you see things shaping up? It's a bit of a general question, a bit of a tough one to kind of get the ball rolling with. But yeah, who wants to dive in?
For me, I think gaming is in a good place at the minute. As you say, you know, it's huge. It's bigger than the movie and the music industry combined. I think it's finally shedding that kind of nerdy tag that comes with it, that people that play games just sit in darkened rooms all day and that's all they do. You know, it's kind of a lot more mainstream these days. There's a lot of older people playing games as well as younger people, and there's such a vast range of the type of games that you can play. And you've only got to look at Nintendo over the years, how they've always kind of marketed towards the parents and the middle-aged people rather than the kids and things like that. And I think we're in a really good place, and I think, you know, I'm glad to have been part of it, you know, for all these years and been able to kind of come along for the ride. And, you know, you see in the way that games have progressed and how they look these days compared to how they looked even 5-10 years ago, you know, and some of them they're real life games. You know, Baldur's Gate 3, put a lot of hours into Baldur's Gate 3, and it's almost like an interactive film that you're a part of, you know, and you're just enthralled with it, and you start playing it. I was playing it with my son and my daughter over Easter, and it's Friday, and then 10 minutes later it's Monday, because you've just enthralled in this thing that you're a part of it, you know, and I think that there's no other medium really that gives you that. I think it's great. I love it.
Yeah. Thomas, you're nodding along. Obviously, you do a lot of movie stuff as well. So is there do you see a correlation between how gaming's shaping up and movies are shaping up, or are they kind of heading in different directions?
I think they are artistically heading in different directions. I would say that the gaming industry, definitely through the early part of the 21st century, went through a real period of chasing the cinematic. And this, as Gordon pointed out, there's still that stuff goes on, and Baldur's Gate 3 is a pretty good example of, like, hugely narrative driven, like, big moments. Same with the Final Fantasy remake trilogy. That's hitting for the same thing, and obviously things like the Metal Gear Solid series, they still do that. But there's now, like, a much bigger portion of the gaming industry, it seems to me, that is more interested in working out what the dynamic is between the player and the game, the story, the mechanics, and trying to find new ways to couch that in new terms, which that's the most interesting thing to me. I tell you what is paralleling the movie industry, though, is obviously the streaming service model. Like we've spoken about, like briefly about things like Game Pass, and for the PlayStation, that PS Plus, slightly to a lesser extent. But what you're seeing there is like the economics of video games are trying to mirror that economics of film distribution. And currently, I think we're in a good place with it. It seems to be working out for the best, because certainly I've been discovering things through that model, both in terms of films and television and in terms of video games, that I would never have touched in a million years, but just happened to pop up to me on the front page of either the PlayStation or Xbox. And I go, yeah, okay, I'll give that a go for 15 minutes. And you discover just some of the most beloved games of the past 5 years that way. So I think that's a really interesting thing that's going on in gaming at the moment. And it's definitely an interesting thing that's going on to combat what we'll probably come back to in a minute, which is the rising cost of individual games, where you're looking at, if you're buying from the digital storefront, you're looking at 70 quid, 80 quid, 90 quid, 100 quid, when you're looking at including season passes and just ridiculous cosmetics and all the like terrible stuff that you really don't need, but everyone has that impulse. And no, I want the full thing. I want everything.
And I want it day one, because I don't want it to I must have it. No, I've got to have it before you. I'm gonna pretend I'm in New Zealand so I can play it 12 hours before you, so I can then tell you what's happened. So
I need to have it downloaded, even though I'm not allowed to play it. I need to have it downloaded.
Yeah, exactly.
With the figurine.
yeah. I think that's interesting what you said about how you spotted things on the like the digital store that you didn't know about. And I think Game Pass has changed the way that we digest this medium forever, basically. I think now the narrative of a game is, I'll talk to my friends and I'll say, would you buy that? No. Would you play if it was on Game Pass? Yeah, I'd give it a go. And you know, and I have discovered two or three games on Game Pass that would have passed me by completely, but as you say, you've seen them on there. And Bramble, the Mountain King, one of the best games I played last year.
Never oh wow, so
it.
Good.
Didn't know anything about it. It was on Game Pass, saw it, downloaded it, absolutely loved it. And I think that is changing the way that we consume games. You know, yeah, there are still the big blockbuster games, and I keep coming back to Baldur's Gate, but they said they'll never put it on Game Pass. But I think, you know, Game Pass has changed the way that we consume games forever.
I think a lot of people forget as well that in the past games were expensive in the past as well. I think a lot of people believe that 20 years ago games were like 10-20 pounds, but no, even in the 90s they were 40-50 pounds, I believe. And some of the, I believe it was Nintendo games, were even 50 back then, which is crazy to think about, considering that there's £50 games now. And yeah, I think there's another argument to be made as well with Nintendo specifically in this sense, because they do not lower their prices ever. That's one of the biggest issues I have, is that if you want to play a Nintendo game, you can wait 10, 20 years and it will still be 50 quid, which is kind of insane. At least with other games, you can probably wait a couple months. There'll be a sale. There will be a summer sale, a winter sale, just a publisher sale. And you might be able to get 50% off, 80% off, something crazy like this. When the next game comes out, you might get it for the 90% off, right? But with Nintendo, it's always at a base price and they almost rarely ever do sales, which is extremely frustrating, I feel. And Nintendo obviously have their right to do that, I guess. But considering they've cornered the market so hard on a lot of games and a lot of very famous, obviously like Mario, stuff like this, it does feel pretty bad that it's such a high cost to even get involved in those things. And considering how many they make, there's what, at least one Mario game every year, at least new one, right? And to keep your passion for that series going, you're just having to put in so much money to keep going. Whereas yeah, maybe with some other game series or something like that, it's not as cost heavy to get in or put your foot in, because as we've just said, there's a lot of games now that go on the Game Pass instantly and you can play it on debut for free. You can try it out kind of like, you know, in a renting style, you know, a free rental. So I don't know, it is interesting. I think there's a lot to be said for Nintendo maybe with that, but yeah, I don't think it's actually too expensive There are some that's a bit suspicious, maybe. The deluxe versions, it's £110 and you just get one or two extra things, like an extra costume for your character. But other than that, yeah, I don't think it's that expensive.
Yeah, I think with things like that, I think we all have our own kind of pet peeves, things we hate when it comes to the monetization of gaming. At least my one is day one DLC. I just don't see the point of it in a digital era. It's like it used to be they brought it in because, oh, we couldn't fit it all on the disc, so we'll charge you an extra £7 to download a bunch extra. But now they're charging you. I mean, like you're talking about Nintendo, and there are other people. Well, everybody does it. It's like, yeah, you bought the game for £70, and now congratulations, you can now spend £10 to buy 4 new weapons and 2 new armor suits that for some reason we couldn't put in the original. It's, yeah, well, we know why they're doing it. They've got to make the money back somehow, let's be honest. But yeah, we've all got those kind of foibles and things we hate, which I'm sure we'll come to in the next few minutes. Because, yeah, obviously the big question we want to ask is, are video games too expensive? I think between us already, we've kind of given a bit of a feel, and without wanting to come across as a bit of an advert for Game Pass, but we've talked about how that's changed things. Because I think there was a forum post a little while ago where somebody posted a speculative question, would you happily pay £100 in a video game? And at the time, you're kind of thinking, oh, you know, that's like a sort of a silly kind of far-fetched question. But the reality is, we probably already are. You know, like Seth said, you know, it wasn't that long ago games were like £50 a pop. Now they went up to £55, £65, £70. And that's, I mean, I know they're always expensive, like 20 years ago, but the scale seems to have kind of tipped up a little bit in more recent years. So the jump from 50 to 55, that seems to have happened quite quickly for me. And then you throw in things like, you know, like I mentioned, the DLC that I hate, the scourge of microtransactions, which nobody really likes. But again, you can kind of understand why they're there, because, you know, video games aren't cheap to make. They've got to get the money back somehow. Even if some companies, they're not even subtle in what they're trying to do anymore. I mean, FIFA, as it used to be, EA Sports FC, as it is now, it used to be great football game, but then suddenly FIFA Ultimate Team kicked off with all the kind of packs you could buy for it. And so it felt like the attention shifted. So it's not always good. But at the same time, without wanting to kind of pick on B, like all games are too expensive, there's still great value for money out there. I think we need to kind of bear that in mind. You know, you could spend £70 on a video game. We've mentioned some titles already. Elden Ring, 200 hours, barely scratched the surface. Happy to restart it again. You know, you can spend £70 on a lot of things and not get that kind of lifespan out of it. But, you know, again, to come back to the key question, are video games too expensive? What are your own kind of buying preferences? What would you buy a new game? Would you just stick with Game Pass? Would you wait for deals to come along? What kind of your gaming habits?
Do you want to know something that's actually interesting now I think about it? With the expensive games that we're speaking about, a lot of the most popular games over the last couple of years are actually free games, if you think about it. Currently, we have The Finals, which is really popular. It's a free game. I believe CSGO is currently free, and it's been one of the most played games for a decade now, I think. Fortnite blew up, was crazy big game. That was free. So we are kind of in an interesting time where we do have these triple A games or quadruple A games that are £50-60 and completely bomb. And then we have these free games coming out that are extremely popular and everyone likes them. And it is kind of interesting to see that, I think.
Yeah, I think it's a difficult market to break into as well, like you say, because you can play Fortnite for free, you know, and it's a very good game. And there are lots of other games that are free. I mean, you mentioned The Finals and Warzone is free. I mean, that's massive. It's a huge game and you can essentially play it for nothing. And then you get games like Skull and Bones come along, which, you know, it's, well, the less said about it, the better, to be honest, you know. But you get, and they're trying to compete with these games that are already embedded, that people are already playing, and they're not going to switch away from the games that they play and they enjoy and they play with their friends. And they might have spent money on skins and things like that. League of Legends, one of the biggest games ever, it could be free to play. My daughter would disagree, probably the amount she spent on skins over the years, but the base game is free. And some would argue that's the hook to get you in. You know, do you give it away for free and then charge for the other stuff on top of it, or is it better to charge £70 or £80 and, you know, and then you kind of make sure that you get in. And I think also the other thing as well, obviously there's a distinct lack of secondhand games these days, A, because we're consuming more digitally, and B, because they're just aren't, apart with the exception of CEX, there is nowhere really. I mean, there's probably the odd indie game shop out there, but there's hardly anywhere that you could go and choose a secondhand game now. And again, I think that's why Game Pass is so good, because you can find those little indie gems, whereas you might have gone into Game Station and had a look and there was 3 for 10, and you buy 2 games that you like, one game you're not so sure about, it turns out to be the best game that you've ever bought, you know, and you've got that flexibility where you just don't have that now. And you know you've got, I don't know what the refund policy is on Xbox, but you know, on Steam I know you've only got a couple of hours to get your money back, and then you're kind of stuck with it. So you know, but coming back to the main question, are games too expensive? I don't think so. I think if you do it right, then no, as you said, you know, 200 hours for a £70 game, I could go and watch Arsenal in the Premier League get beat for £70 and I get an hour and a half out of it, and that's it. The value for money for me, I think, is if you're savvy and if you do it right and if you shop right, and I think a lot of people do shop right, then no, I don't think. It's coming back to a point that Seth made about games being expensive in the past. When I queued up for my PlayStation 2, I couldn't afford any games to go with it. I could only afford the PlayStation. I took it home and just played the demos for like 2 weeks until I could afford a game for it. So
all those free games they give you that no one wants to play.
Yeah, that's the ones. Yeah, that was when free games weren't any good. But, and I think also, you know, you look at the people that are playing video games, they have a lot more disposable income than they used to. And, you know, £70 is not... That's not they don't bulk too much of that, you know. I pay a fiver for a coffee and I don't even flinch, you know. And if you'd said that to me 5-10 years ago, I go, I'm gonna pay £5 for a coffee, are you mad? And now you just do it, you just hand your money over and that's it. So for me, I don't think they're too expensive. I think if a game's worthy of that cost, then I think you pay for it. And talking about microtransactions, Ian, it's, you know, it sounds like it's a little bit of a bugbear of yours, and all the hoo-ha about Dragon's Dogma 2 and its microtransactions. You know, it still performed brilliantly. It was one of the best. You know, everybody was saying how, you know, the microtransactions were evil and stuff like that. But if you didn't actually need them, if you didn't want to spend the money on the microtransactions, you didn't have to. You didn't need them. Yeah. So, you know, it was something that they put in, and I don't think it affected the sales of the game overall. Yeah, they got a little bit of bad publicity out of it, but I don't think it affected it overall. I think it, you know, at the end of the day, it's down to consumers. If you don't want to spend the money, don't spend the money. Nobody's asking you to spend.
It's really funny that, like, speaking about how you're right, microtransactions is no longer like it doesn't seem to be a hot discussion point anymore at all. I remember back when Diablo 3 came out and the auction house received huge backlash at the time for being predatory and unfair and just like tricking people into spending real world currency in the way that they've been used to spending fake currency in things like World of Warcraft. Then Diablo Immortal came out, was it during lockdown or just after lockdown? And implemented all of those same practices again, much harder. And I think Diablo Immortal is one of Blizzard's like highest earning games, like in the billions. Like we're talking like thousands of dollars a second is like we're being spent in that. And so I'm not sure what happened in those intervening years, but there was a time when people were furious enough about these microtransactions to get them reversed. In Diablo 3, they took them out. They took the auction house out in one of the later updates, and then just put it right back in, and nobody batted an eyelid. So I think there's a weird like expectation now of these more predatory money spinning practices that people are just like, yeah, that's just part of games now, which I find really like infuriating and quite sad as well. Because
I think there's an acceptance of it, I think, you know, like you say, it does become a norm. But like Gordon said, you know, it's not necessarily a bad thing because for the most part they're optional. You know, if you want to spend £7 on a new fancy outfit, then fine, spend £7 on a fancy outfit. But sometimes the implementation, like you were saying, Tom, it can come across a little bit awkward and maybe a little bit predatory as well. And that, you know, if like something like Fortnite games aimed at like a, well, I would say Fortnite games aimed at younger people, people my age are playing it as well. So it's not just like, and we all, you know, get crazy on a Saturday night after a few drinks and we're playing, think, oh, why not click on it? Why not? So yeah, I don't think microtransactions is necessarily a bad thing, but I think at the same time, you know, you just need to be a little bit sensible about how they're implemented. So make it fair, make it so you're getting something that's actually worth the money. Get it something, you know, a lot of things. I mean, I mentioned before, like the outfits, the costumes. You know, if you want to make your character look nice, pay the extra. That's not a big deal. But I don't. But the fact that you've chucked that kind of thing into a special edition where, you know, you don't really care about the outfits, you just want the content.
Yeah.
You know, you want the map packs, you want the extra characters, you want, you know, those extra missions which add in new stuff. I think it's just kind of it's not exactly a line that people are crossing. It's more kind of a case of just making sure that you make people aware of what they're paying for. But
I think that definitely, for me anyway, that has an impact on when I buy a game. If I know that that's likely going to be an element of it for me, I'm probably going to wait until the price drops. If I'm under the suspicion that, yeah, I'm probably going to drop another like 15 quid on expansions or character packs or, you know, those additional, I'm going to wait until it drops below that's, you know, 70 quid, 60 quid, like, because I can feel that if I know that I'm going to be spending money on something, that this is the product and this is the product I'm going to play. Can't believe we're coming back to Baldur's Gate 3 again, but we are.
Game of the year.
More than happy to spend the full amount on that because I know I'm getting the full experience from what I've, you know, I've opted to pay for this game, and I've got this game as is. And I think it just depends on that context, those other practices around it. Sort of help make that decision for me. And it definitely makes that decision for me when it comes to Gordon, you were saying you don't play a lot of sports games. I also don't play a lot of sports games, but I do like MLB The Show. And again, I never play current year. And I just never play current year because I know that that's going to be full of the, you know, the transfer fees and the players and the loot crates, and I just don't want that. I just want to play the game.
Yeah
I'm a bit more, I'd say 50-50 on this issue, because I think if it can be done right and it can be done really poorly. So there are some examples that can be good. For example, League of Legends, which is a game I've spent probably a decade of my life on, an extreme amount of hours, right? But I probably spent £100 on, and it's like, if you really think about that, for 10 years of my life, playing a game for 10 years, 10,000 hours probably plus, and I only spent £100. That's incredible. But there are other games where you're incentivized to buy their microtransactions to help you win, you know, which is, that's where I get a bit iffy about it. I'm not a fan of that pay to win kind of games. And then there's maybe certain games that I get a bit frustrated with when they make you pay an upfront price and then they want microtransactions. And it's kind of like, well, I've already paid you for the game. I should be getting everything else for free, essentially. I've paid you for your, you know. So I'm not a fan of them. And Sonic is maybe a bit different, but Tekken 7 with their DLC, I was not a fan of it, because if you're going to create new characters, okay, maybe you can charge for them, right? They're new characters. But if you're going to put fan favorites like Lee behind a paywall after people have been playing him for 6 Tekkens, and a lot of the Tekken combos do follow through, and as we all know, fighting games are extremely hard. The people who play these games put so many hours into learning their characters. And I feel like if I was a Lee main, I would feel really upset that they told me, hey, you want to, oh, you're a Lee main. All right, you're going to have to pay extra to play your character that you've been playing for at that point, what, it would have been 10 years or something. So there is some level to it. And I believe that sports games is an interesting one, because I do play that a lot. And I remember maybe 10 years ago or so, I don't know if any of you remember this, but there was a way you could get really cheap FIFA coins in the past. You would go on eBay, pay someone for money, like maybe £1 for loads of coins, and they would buy a player that you listed on the market, and you'd get tons of coins for maybe a quid, and you'd get loads of packs out of that. And I used to spend money on that because that's worth it. You know, it's fun. FIFA found a way to cut that, and then their own money, it was probably about £10 worth, and it's like, I'm not paying £10 for like 2 spins. And then you have to think about the children as well. There is a lot of younger people playing these games. And with FIFA, it does cross a lot of gambling lines. There is a lot of, it's very fishy and muddy water when it comes to spinning and gambling and stuff like this. And that's probably I think that's one of the biggest worries I have when it comes to microtransactions.
But
it's FC 24, as it's called these days, it's not called FIFA, is currently the number one selling game. So they must be doing something right. Sorry, just going back to your point, Seth, about Tekken. So so if you're a Lee main, you'll complain about it, but I guarantee you'll pay the money.
Oh yeah, they will.
So
We all complain about it, but we'll pay the money. Yeah, and you can see those cogs of commercialism working in the back. And it's
at the end of the day, they're all trying to make money, aren't they?
Exactly. So. And it's that obviously, like, I know you're rinsing me.
Yeah,
that's what irks.
But here's my money anyway.
Yeah.
If the system works, why change it, right?
Well, exactly. That's it. Yeah.
They need to make the money to make the next game. And we're going to buy the next game because we want to play the next game. So, you know, is it kind of, mutually beneficial? Kind of system. I don't know. Because, but I mean, would you still buy full price games, or are you using like Game Pass? Are you waiting for those deals and discounts to roll along? I haven't bought a full price game for a long time. I'm signed up to Game Pass. Like some of you guys have mentioned, I'm quite happy playing older games on that. I think I saw a recent report that suggested that people are happier play older games than pay top dollar for the new games. Which, it's not particularly surprising when you talk about how well Game Pass has been doing. I might be tempted, GTA rolls around, you might kind of be tempted to splash out if that longevity is going to be there, if it's going to have 50 hours, 100 hours, if it's going to have a replayable factor, if it's going to be like a live service game where they're going to add to it in 3 months' time, maybe at a small cost, maybe, it's a season pass, it's worth the money, I might be invested. But as a rule, I'd rather not pay top dollar for a brand new game unless I need to. So, but that's just me. I mean, some people might have more money than I do.
We have a strict no pre-order policy in our house. In that you never pre-order a game. You always wait until it comes out. And I nearly got burnt with the Battlefront Classic Collection a few weeks ago. I have to say, I nearly, very, very nearly pushed the button on that, and I'm glad I didn't. I'm glad I waited. I would 100%. More than that, I would more than happily, for a game that I know that I'm going to play, I'll buy it. I would always wait. I don't think I can't remember the last time I bought a game day one, to be honest. I would wait at least a week.
I think I'm a bit of a rube. I do still buy things like House Flipper 2 I paid full price for.
Okay.
Close the podcast there. That's, I mean, with yeah,
that, but prior to that, I think Diablo 4 was the last thing that I bought. Was the last thing I bought day one, and I agree. I don't think I've pre-ordered anything in maybe years, just because it's just a recipe for disappointment. So I'll still occasionally buy things full price, and I think I try and split things evenly between, like, I'm going to give this game my money because it looks like an indie outfit that I want to see do well. So I know that, what are they called? Evil Empire, the spin-off group from Twin Motion, have got a new Prince of Persia Metroidvania coming out. I'll pay for that very happily because, firstly, it's in a genre that I love. It is a franchise that I love, and it's a studio that I want to see do well. So in those sort of circumstances where I kind of know where the money's going, I'm more happy to pay top dollar than for something like an Assassin's Creed or a BioWare game, or, those sorts of things where they've got them. They don't need my money. They may get my money, but right now they don't need it. So
I'm going to withhold. I like that.
I'm more of a person who waits for the sales, really, but that's not necessarily just because of the money, but games these days, you can't trust that they're going to work. It's really sad, but there's so many games that come out now and they're just broken on release. I mean, Cyberpunk, wow. They brought it back. They brought it back. But on release, wow. What can you say? There's, and it's been, and for me, a big one was Battlefield. I'm a really big Battlefield fan, and I was extremely hyped to get that game. And again, what was that? I don't even know what to say. So yeah, I've been burnt a couple times, so I am extremely adverse now to buying games on release. I will just wait mostly to see, okay, how many bugs are in this game? Is it actually playable at this point, you know? So yeah, that's the main reason I wait. Just to make sure it's a working game.
Yeah, I purposely did that with Cyberpunk because I saw the kind of the previews and I knew chances are it wasn't going to be as great as we all hoped it would be at launch. So I was quite happy to kind of wait. Initially, you're waiting for kind of like, you know, the first week patches to roll along and kind of fix a few things. But then it was kind of like, oh, it might take a bit more than a week for them to patch this. So we had to wear it. And I did get around, I played it last year and I did really like it. It is a whole lot better now. I think I mentioned before as well, I played a lot of No Man's Sky. And when that first came out, it just wasn't the game that people kind of thought it was going to be. But they've done an amazing job of creating a, you know, an amazing game. Hopefully they'll be able to do the same with Starfield. Fingers crossed. You never know. So I think there is a good scope, you know, for holding back a little bit and maybe not diving into these games too early and being disappointed. But at the same time, if it's a game you love, it's kind of hard to say no sometimes, isn't it? So you just kind of have to bite the bullet a little bit.
Full disclosure, I drank the Kool-Aid on Cyberpunk, took the day off to play it day one. Never again.
No. Have you played it since
ever
though?
Again? Oh yeah, Philip played it, completed it with a DLC, and absolutely loved it.
Yeah.
But what's annoying now is that we have this thing called a redemption arc, you know, and where yeah. Oh, this game's completed its redemption arc, and everybody's like, oh, look how well they've done. No. Shouldn't have been released in the first place. They should have waited 12, 18 months and then released it. Shouldn't have been released in the state it was in. And it's happened since, and Seth touched on Battlefield. We knew that was coming, you know, with all the previews and everything. We knew that wasn't going to be the game that we wanted it to be. And so it turned out. And now they've just announced that after season 7, they're canning it and moving on to the next one. So yeah, these games shouldn't be released, but they are, and people buy them. And that's the problem. And while we continue to do that as gamers, they'll continue to release unfinished products and then patch it day one or day two or day three. Once they've got our money, they've got our money then. Yeah. So that's
and think
it.
Of, you know. Think of how many people buy these games and they have enough disposable income that they don't care that it flopped.
Yeah.
They will just leave it and put it on the shelf because I believe that even microtransactions, there's a lot. I think there's a small percentage of people who are putting most of the money in for microtransactions. I don't think it's a large amount of people putting lots of money in. It's a couple people who just do not care and they're just going to blow loads of money on these games no matter what happens. And you see it the same with sports games. So I'm quite into sports games. And every year, it's the same discussions in these communities. Okay, last year's sucked. No one pre-ordered this one. First trailer comes out, the first bit of news, any little tiny thing.
Take my money.
It'll be the tiniest things. It'll be something like, oh, Haaland has his hair tied up in this one. And they'll be like, I'm buying it. I'm pre-ordering it, guys. And everyone's like, no. You know, Walter White in the back of the car, no, Jesse, don't do it. It's tough.
An extra £7 to get the man bun on Haaland.
You've got to pay my extra money. I'm there. So it's our own fault, really. It is our fault.
We're all suckers. We all do it. We all still pay out. But that's, you know, 100%. We love the games. They know it. The publishers know that they can push the boundaries a little bit.
And we kind of roll
with a punch a little bit. So you just have to, maybe, you know, each, like we mentioned, we all have our own personal little foibles about what we're kind of willing to do. So I guess it's a case of all of us just kind of take the hits where we can because we know we're going to enjoy the game and get value for money out of it in whatever way suits our own gaming styles of gaming.
And I think it's only going to get worse the more games companies that are taken over by hedge funds and people that have got no interest in gaming but only want to make money. You know, the whole sorry saga around Embracer Games has just shown, you know, what state the industry is in at the minute. You know, they scooped up all the studios and then didn't get the loan that they wanted, and now they've sold them all off again. And you know, they were the savior of video games, you know, and now they're everybody's favorite villain. And I think that there's nothing to say that won't happen again. And all they're interested in is the bottom line. You know, they don't care about us as gamers. They're just interested in the profit at the end of the day.
Then there's the asset flips we got to worry about as well. You know, the day before, I waited years for that game, and I can't believe it. I couldn't believe it was a scam. It was an actual scam. I did not. I never trust games on debut, but I was so upset because that game looked amazing. But I mean, that was the whole point, right? They marketed it really well. They made it look really good, and it was just an asset flip. It wasn't a game, which is expressly sad. And there's kind of like games now that the studios that are making indie games, I believe they're making better games than some AAA studios. One of my favorite games of all time is a more modern game, which is Valheim. That game was made by five people. Five people put that game together, and that is an extremely fun game. And I think it was £10-15 when it came out.
Yep.
I don't think there's any microtransactions, no DLC. All the DLC they do add is it just goes to the game. It's just put in the game.
Yep.
And I'm thinking, wow, you guys deserve more money.
Yeah.
Well, I gave you £15 for this.
That's an example of how to do it right.
I played that for free on Game Pass, I think, when it came in preview. You make me feel bad now. I'll give him some money.
I bought it, Seth. You're all right. I bought it on PC. It's all good, mate. It's all good.
Okay. Well, I guess we better start wrapping things up. Time is getting on and all of that. I mean, I'm supposed to keep this within a reasonable time frame, I suppose. So maybe just before we go, you know, we don't get to do this again until July. So we've got a month's window to maybe think about what we're going to be playing next. So anything on the horizon doesn't necessarily have to be a new game, but maybe an old game you want to catch up on. I mean, a couple for me. Hellblade 2 is going to be a big deal. I did write some down because I couldn't remember. Still Wakes of Deep is a game that's kind of quite hot on my radar. I'm kind of worried about Destiny 2 DLC, the Final Shape, rolling along, whether that's going to get me back into it again. That could be a rabbit
hole.
I'll buy it.
It's 10 years. It's 10 years. You can't. We've got to know what happens. Okay. You'll buy it.
What about Elden Ring? There's Elden Ring DLC coming as well. Yep. That's just more suffering than I could probably do without. So yeah, anything else? What's on your selective radar? Seth, what are you going to play next? Obviously, you got reviews for us as well.
I think the biggest one is number one on Steam. Everyone wants it. Manor Lords. Everyone wants to play that game. It looks brilliant. It looks
day one
fun.
Game Pass as well.
Well, if only mine worked. But I can't wait to see how that is. And I hope to God when it debuts, it works and it's good and it's fun. And then hopefully it goes on sale sometime soon.
Tom, what about you? What's on your playlist?
I'm gonna say I'm going to have played Hollow Knight Silksong. That's what I'm going to. By the time we have our next podcast, it's going to be out after five long years. It's going to be there. This is me giving you the inside scoop.
You heard it here first, folks.
Brilliant.
Jordan, what about you?
Elden Ring, I think, is probably the main one, and Destiny 2. Destiny 2. I just don't know. I don't know. We'll see, but it'll be interesting to see the end of it. There's also a new Elder Scrolls Online expansion. I dip in and out of Elder Scrolls a lot, so the Gold Road and Scrybin. There's a lot of good buzz about that, so I might dip back into that and have a look. So plenty to keep me busy, that's for sure.
Yeah, there's that temptation.
And I'll still be spreading Managed Democracy as well until then, hopefully. So with my fellow Helldivers. So
plenty to keep you busy then.
Yeah, definitely.
All good. Okay, well, that just about wraps it up for this gaming podcast. Hopefully you've enjoyed what we've been talking about. As mentioned, you're more than welcome to drop us a few comments. Let us know if you'd like what kind of topics you'd like us to talk about next. It's obviously a lot to be talking about, a lot of games to be talking about, as we've already mentioned. Hopefully you've been able to pick out two or three to maybe add to your own personal playlists for the coming weeks and months. So before we wrap up, first of all, thanks to Tom, Seth and Gordon for joining us. Thank you very much for your time, and happy gaming for the weeks and months ahead. And just to point to our next the next ABF podcast will be the Hi-Fi edition, which is on Monday the 6th of May. That'll be followed by the TV Display and Calibration podcast on Monday the 13th of May. Then there'll be the Home AV edition on Monday the 20th of May. And then the Movies and TV Shows podcast will be live at 7 p.m. on Monday the 27th of May.
That's the best one.
Obviously. Well, second best now. You've got competition, mate. Come on.
Yeah. No, this is the best one, mate.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Second best. Thank you.
Speaking of which, the next gaming podcast will be on Monday the 29th of July. So, hopefully we'll have lots of good stuff to talk about by then. But in the meantime, if you have enjoyed this podcast, please give us a like and obviously subscribe to the AV Forums podcast channel on YouTube. Hit the notification bell so you don't miss out when we do publish live streams, product reviews, and a whole lot more. And if you really, really did like what we're doing or what the other guys are doing, then you're more than welcome to buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/AV Forums. So that's it for now. My name's Ian Collin. Thank you for watching and or listening, and hopefully we'll see you all again soon. Bye-bye.
See ya.